Welcome to the NAPMA Maximum Impact Teleconference Call Archive CD. Each month, you're encouraged to join our NAPMA executive team of proven hyper-successful school owners, including Grandmaster Stephen Oliver, Master Toby Milroy, Grandmaster Jeff Smith, and many other special guests, along with our group of hundreds of growth-minded school owners from every corner of the globe, all gathering to collaborate, share what's working today strategies, proven successful marketing techniques, and tried and true business principles to help you take your school to the next level on this live teleconference. But this is also your chance to have your specific questions answered by our brain trust of industry experts. Check the call schedule in your member support package or in your members resource website for call-in times and access information. So let's jump right into this call in progress.
All right, welcome everyone to our NAPMA Maximum Impact call for the month of September. And today we have a relatively thick agenda. Again, as I was mentioning the conference call instructions, we do have a good number of new members on the line with us today. And right now we're in conference mode, or I'm sorry, presentation mode. So, let me switch it to Q&A. Okay, so now we're in Q&A mode, so at any time during today's call, if you have questions or feedback about what we're talking about, you can just hit *6 on your phone and you'll be unmuted and put into the conference. We have to sort of manage the background noise on these calls. In many cases, we have a lot of people on these calls from lots of different countries all over the world, so it tends to get a little unwieldy if we don't have this process in place. So sorry that we're not live, open conference call, but it tends to get a little unwieldy. So today we have a lot of topics to cover, and a couple of updates. A few things I wanted to mention before we get into our topics today. First of all, our outline for the day is, we're going to take some time at the beginning of our call today to address some questions that we've gotten in over email. We do this call almost every month. We don't have a group call when we have a live event, like a live conference, as we did with our boot camp last month. But on other months, we have this call, which is really set aside to help you implement faster. A lot of school operators who are in our membership base, they perhaps have a specific question about a system that they're implementing, or they're working on the rotating curriculum and are having a hard time getting the pieces to work together, or they're having questions about internet marketing or websites or direct mail or whatever the case may be. And we block this time out each month to help address those questions. And the most efficient way to do that is if you can send us the questions ahead of time. So typically I'll email out notifications of the call a week ahead of time or so that you have time to prepare. And if you do have specific questions about anything that you're working on, it's really useful if you can give us a relatively thorough outline of that question and send it over ahead of time so that we have some time to review. And if it requires any additional research on our end, or if we have to put pieces of the puzzle together or something like that, it really helped us be prepared for our time together. As you well know, we have several member levels in NAPMA, seven right now. And this call is designed for all of our Maximum Impact members and above. And what that means is Maximum Impact members, this is sort of our opportunity to connect and get questions answered, get problems solved, and keep your forward progress moving quickly. Levels above Maximum Impact start at Peak Performers and then move on to Inner Circle and then on to Millionaire Wealth and the Multi-School Mastermind Groups. And each of those tiers add to what we're doing in Maximum Impact a level of one-on-one consulting, for lack of a better description, one-on-one coaching, where in some cases school operators really want to move quickly. They want to get things implemented much more quickly than you can if you're sort of out there on your own. And it reminds me a lot of, we use Jeff Smith as an example a lot, but if you're in a 12-round fight and you're on round 8 or 9 of a 12-round fight, you're not really the most objective person in the room, right? When you've been punched in the face for 8 straight rounds and you're bleeding out of the left side of your eye and your left eye and your nose has been broken for 2 rounds and it's hard to breathe, you really need to have that coach in the corner when the bell rings and you go sit on the stool, it's really important that you have somebody looking at the fight from the outside who can be objective and who can help you strip away, you know, all of the fog of war, right, and give you some really good objective advice, objective opinions about what's happening. It's really exactly the same thing that we teach all of our students. It's how we help our students perform at their highest level, right? It's without that competent instructor in the martial arts classroom looking over the shoulder of the student, number one, keeping the student from making, you know, bad mistakes over and over and over again, but also helping them make a lot of forward progress quickly. Without that relationship in a martial arts school, your students would take just forever to be successful in martial arts, right? They're sort of out there on their own. So that's what Peak Performers and Inner Circle is all about. It's all about getting sort of that extra feedback, that extra someone looking over your shoulder, looking through your numbers, helping you sort of face hard facts in the mirror and addressing those. And I'm not you know, trying to do a commercial for Inner Circle or Peak Performers, but we have, for all of our Maximum Impact members and above, we're all together on today's call. So we have folks, for example, Peak Performers are all under $30,000 or $40,000 a month. Inner Circle members are all over $30,000 or $40,000 a month. Millionaire Wealth members are typically over $30,000 or $40,000 a month, plus their interests lie in building real wealth through their martial arts school rather than just. See, in a martial arts school, there really are no assets in most martial arts school other than the cash flow that you're generating. So the Millionaire Wealth Group is all about how to leverage that cash flow into long-standing assets for your retirement or to create a stable wealth base rather than what happens in a lot of martial arts schools is they, you know, teach martial arts for 35 years and look back and realize that they haven't really created any wealth. And then the Multi-School Mastermind Group sits on top of that, which again is designed for school operators who are looking at doing large multi-operations or even small multi-operations in a geographic area. So just as a matter of course, we have a lot of new members on the line today, and this call is for all of our Maximum Impact members and above. So we have a really good mix of school operators on the call. Today our quick agenda is number one, at the beginning of the call, we're gonna walk through some questions that we've received by email. As I described earlier, it's really a really great way to help us have some time to digest, you know, these questions and things ahead of time so that we can prepare a good answer for you on the call. Second agenda item is we're going to be talking quite a bit, about staff development systems that you really want to make sure that you have operating at a high level of efficiency in your school. Staffing is one of the kind of Achilles heels of most martial arts operations. It's one of the bottlenecks and constraints that hold so many of our smart, you know, folks back, is that they haven't sort of looked far enough into the future and realized that they had to plan for this ahead of time, right? And it's one of those kind of old aphorisms that if you wait until you need staff to start training staff, you've waited way too long. It's way too late, right? So we're going to talk a lot about that, and then we'll have some time at the end of our call today too. If there's any specific questions on the line, we can break for that as well. So, Ms. Robert, I see you're with us. I know you had a few questions by email, and I had a couple. Maybe we should address yours, and then we can transition as we go.
You bet. And mine, I'll take the ones that are more applicable, I guess, to everybody. One that I had is from David Arnebeck, who may be on the call, and if so, David, feel free to chip in and expand from here. Does he star six to get in if he's on the call, Charlie?
That's right, yep.
Okay. And one of his questions was, what is your input on the new healthcare laws for full-time staff, or is this not a major concern? And obviously that's a question about Obamacare. And here's what I would say about that is if you're a really big multi-school operator, and the threshold, I believe, is 50 full-time employees, so, you know, you'd have to be pretty substantial as a multi-school operator to be at that point. And these would be schools that you own outright, not licensees, franchisees, that type of stuff. Then you have to worry quite a bit because At that level, you're now having to, an obligatory fashion as an employer, provide medical insurance. And I'll tell you, as a multi-school operator over the years, the old system was, when I say the old system, it's what currently we're dealing with. This hasn't kicked in yet, but with the new Obamacare regulations, there are some positives for everybody. The old system was, is employer-provided health insurance coverage was tax-deductible. So in other words, it's being paid for by pre-tax dollars. And in many cases, you know, you'd end up with a split with the employee, let's say 50-50, you pay half, they pay half. But in both cases, it was deductible. They were perceiving it as an employee benefit. And there can be some discussion about that, because I found usually my 20-something employees really didn't care. And if I was spending $300 on medical insurance for them, they'd rather have $300 in their pocket, because they didn't perceive that to be a value particularly. Which is a big issue, by the way, of the whole Obamacare thing anyway, is that, you know, requires people who otherwise didn't care to have insurance, make it work. But here's what I was going to say, is the advantage to us is probably going to be, if it all works out the way it's supposed to, is that one is that employees will be able to buy their own health insurance and have it be tax deductible. So the pressure on us as an employer of people less than 50 actually reduces a little bit from the standpoint of means provided. The second thing is that'll happen is that there's in theory anyway, and every state is different. Some of them are dragging their feet, some of them are accelerating. But in theory, there'll be these insurance exchanges, which then allow employees to buy into the health insurance exchanges to get individual insurance that would be essentially comparable to employer-provided insurance. The third thing, the negative is, of course, is that premiums are skyrocketing on these things. You know, again, depending upon who your employees are, is if you have guys that have been with you 10, 12, 15 years, they're full-timers, they have families, they're 35, 40, 45 years and up, is it's pretty important to address this for them and to, you know, to have a plan with them. The average 22-year-old athletic guy who's, let's say, a college student, or they're, you know, a young, you know, 27-year-old, you know, the problem is they don't particularly perceive it to be a benefit, and they don't recognize how expensive it is. So there's some balance back and forth. But they, you know, there's a long answer to a short question, but, you know, from the standpoint of staffing and something to worry about, you know, it's not very high on the list. But if the new healthcare thing unfolds the way it's supposed to, and God knows it's a train wreck, so we'll see. But it actually, for martial arts school owners, it should be a benefit for us. So as an individual owner-operator, it makes it easier for you to go get personal insurance, and it's tax-deductible. It forces the companies to cover existing, you know, situation, which was one of the other benefits of an employer-sponsored plan. It may, in theory at least, will make it easier for employees to get their own insurance, and these exchanges, in theory, will make it easier, and it's supposed to make it less expensive, but I don't think that's happening. I mean, it's, you know, our health insurance premiums have jumped, at least 40% in the last 24 months. That
way. Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. I was agreeing. Oh. I said, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. But that was one question. And the other question that he had, and you can tell David's kind of an analytic like I am, but is we've been talking about staff compensation, and there are two completely different ways of looking at the world. You look at the world differently as a multi-school operator than if you do as a single-school operator, right? multi-school in my mind means two or more, which I prefer it to be three or more, frankly. But in the multi-school environment, my recommendation has always been to keep the payroll at each individual location, which in a multi-school environment shouldn't include you as the owner, to about 25% of the gross revenue. And so as we talk about building staff, there's two tiers of staff, and sometimes people get stuck in the middle of these two tiers, and we'll explain that more in a minute. But there's the full-time guys who hopefully you train extensively, who are really sharp and are critical to the operation. And what I have a tendency to find is that we undercompensate those people and undertrain those people. And what we have a tendency to do, martial arts school owners have a tendency to end up with a bunch of part-time people. Their aggregate part-time payroll is probably way too high, but instead they'd be much better off to have a really solid full-time program director and a really solid full-time instructor rather than all this part-time stuff going on. But his question was about how to, you know, transition to that structure. And again, I typically, in a multi-school environment, find branch manager making about 12% of the gross, find the second person, whether it's an instructor or program director, making about 10% of the gross. And therefore, if you have a location that's in the $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month range, you're looking at somebody making $75,000 to $80,000 a year. So, you know, it's important to structure that in a proper way. And, we spend quite a bit of time in the materials on that, and we're both happy to take more questions about that. The third question that David had was, he's having a question about moving somebody from part-time to full-time and whether he should put that into a written agreement or not. And, you know, having all of these steps as an employer-employee relationship, there's several things that people ask about pretty regularly. One is some kind of employee manual. Two is an employee contract. Three is some type of non-compete, non-solicitation agreement. And I'll tell you, as an employer, the advantage of having written employment agreements is not very high, other than from a standpoint of having non-compete and non-solicitation agreements, and those are mostly valuable from the standpoint of having the conversation with the person up front and having a real clear understanding of what the relationship is and creating a barrier and impediment to them trying to go across the street. And what we should all be thinking about as employers is that, you know, we're never going to have a full-time person who's good for, like, their entire life. That's in all companies. Doesn't matter whether you're Google or whether you're the local martial arts school, is that people go through quite a few career changes in their life nowadays. And, in high tech, they jump from Apple to Google to Microsoft, do their own startup. Their startup gets gobbled back sometimes by their previous employer. I mean, all that kind of stuff is standard, but it's standard throughout all industries. What we as owners are concerned about is in not having a full-time person go down the street with the student body. And I find that preventing that usually is mostly about having the conversation up front about, you know, whenever they're ready to go out on their own, just let us know. We'll help them any way we can. You know, the thing we should know up front is that these students are the students of, you know, the school. They're not the students of this particular instructor. It's important for when they're ready to make the transition to understand, we'll help them any way we can. But, you know, the thing is not to go down the street and create problems. It's just for us to work together on a long-term basis. And the more you're having that conversation, the more you're clear up front, the fewer problems you have. The employment agreement, from an employer standpoint, is it's useful to have a clear understanding on what compensation is. It's useful to have a non-compete and non-solicitation. On the flip side is, you know, pretty much anywhere in the United States, you're at an at-will situation. And if you start trying to document too many things, is the source of litigation in most employer-employee situations is when you tried to do the thorough employee manual and you tried to do the thorough and employee contract, and then you, in fact, for and oftentimes for cause, don't follow it to the letter. So, you know, you said in the contract or you said in the manual that you'll give them three warnings, and all of a sudden now you have the 22-year-old dating the 14-year-old, and it says you give them three warnings, but we're not going to give them three warnings for that. We're going to fire them immediately, cut them off the knees, and see if it, you know, they can be legally prosecuted. So you've got to be very careful in not creating a bureaucratic nightmare for yourself, because that's the point at which, you know, you are liable for suing. Being sued is to a great extent, the less you've tried to create the bureaucratic 200-page employee manual, the fewer problems you have. Toby, there were three pretty long answers to pretty detailed, specific questions, but anything you would add to that, or if anybody has specific questions on that kind of employee-specific stuff?
Especially on that specific, on the last one. I mean, I totally agree. I think everybody should be using some type of a non-solicitation, non-disclosure, mm-hmm. you know, agreement. Although, again, I think you said it, but maybe to even make it more explicit is the odds of you actually being able to do something about that. You know, if somebody decides to go down the street and compete with you or something like that, the odds of you being able to, you know, sue them and collect a bunch is pretty low anyway. However, there are some intellectual property concerns that you do want to be concerned about, like your customer list, you know, and software and things like that. Mm-hmm. So if they go across the street and try to take a bunch of students, well, see, now you've got some leverage and some cause. But again, I think you're exactly right. It's really about just having the conversation with them up front and making sure that that's all laid out on the table. The other
well,
piece of it is – oh, please.
I would say that most of the multi-school operators that I've known have had this problem, at least a few times over the years. And, you know, I've had, you know, over 30 years fewer problems with it than anybody I know, to tell you the truth. And the biggest thing is it's about the relationship that you maintain with the employees and how upfront you are about how willing you are to help with the, you know, their ongoing career growth. And there's a strange employee mindset, and it seems to be built in. I've never understood it. But there's a mindset that suddenly they think that you're expecting them to be there for life. And then when they decide that it's time for their next step in their growth and they'd like to own their own school, is a lot of times they do it behind your back, you know, and they give you 24 hours notice, or they give you 7 days notice. And see, the smart way to do it would be for them to be talking to you all the way along the line, and you to be talking to them all the way along the line. I mean, in my case, you know, June Marie and Nick Okinas and Ed Muffley and Jeff Smith all helped me put together the business plan, you know, and knew what my plans were a year out. But that doesn't seem to happen unless you kind of force the issue. And what happens is with an employee relationship is you end up with the bad ones will probably be with you forever until you get tired of them and fire them. And the really good ones are constantly looking for growth opportunities. And if you are big enough to give them like a career ladder internal to your organization, or if you build into the plan is, you know, how they're going to own their own location or something like that, then you can keep them internal, which is the argument for franchise or the argument for licensing or the argument for joint ventures. But really you have to have that conversation all the way along. And you have to have the conversation in one hand about all the things that they don't know, and helping them understand what they need to learn before they go out on their own to be able to do it successfully. But you've also got to be having the conversation about, you know, how willing you are to help them whenever they decide that they're ready to do it, and set them up for that proposition. On the non-compete thing, Toby, there's not a good general answer, because of course we have members from, you know, like 20 some different countries, but in the United States, every state is different on this. On some, let's say Texas is, the employer is in a real good position, and others, they side with employee and with the consumers. So, you know, there is a wide variety, but I will tell you, the point at which you get into litigation is the point at which everybody has lost. And the point at which you just had the conversation with the person about, you know, what your objectives are, what their objectives are, how you'll work together moving forward is, and again, I mean, we just had one of the staff members of one of our franchises do this, and the good thing is they're moving, you know, 15, 20 miles away. The bad thing is they basically, you know, 2 days before they're ready to open the other location, told the owner. And it's just silly because, again, you know, in my case, I like having Junry support 30 years later and Jeff Smith support 30 years later. And you're going into a startup, is as an employee, it's very helpful to have the owner, you know, cheering you on, hosting the grand opening, hosting the going away party, and on tap to give you support and questions. And in some cases, that means you have an ongoing formal business relationship. And in other cases, it just means you're, you know, we're all friends and we're helping each other out. And you're not doing anything to hurt me, and I'm doing everything in the world to cheer you on for new success. And so, there's both of those aspects to it.
I think to kind of crystallize that on the litigation front, you're exactly right. As soon as somebody has to hire the attorney, you're both lost. You're enriching the attorneys more than anybody else. And again, so the guy breaks off from you, decides to go across the street and open a school. Well, even if you do have cause, even if you're in a state like Texas that has, you know, that leans the direction of the employer, well, they're a startup. So, you know, you have to have three things to have a lawsuit. You have to have somebody, you have to be able to prove negligence, you have to have some damages, and then you have to be able to have somebody with deep pockets you can go sue. So typically the guy who went across the street to open the school doesn't have very deep pockets. So what are you going to recover, you know?
Well, in that case, what you're looking for is a TRO, temporary restraining order. And the temporary restraining order is to shut them down.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
I mean, I've litigated this effectively in the past. We've spent round numbers, $50,000 to get a temporary restraining order. It immediately put the other business out of business. And then what it did is the next step is we got a judgment for legal fees. In which case they promptly filed bankruptcy because they didn't have anything
exactly.
to begin with. So, what it was, and it was, yeah, I knew this going in, but it was a $50,000 investment to get the, you know, to shut them down.
Exactly.
But the other side of it, by the way, is, you know, what we've seen pretty consistently also is that even when that happens, if you're running the school properly, so you've got new students enroll in a one-year agreement, and they upgrade the black belt, the black belt club or the leadership program. Some portion of them prepay, all of them are paid a substantial down payment or contracted for 36 months or whatever the term might be. Is what happens is when the guy goes down the street, if you're structuring everything right to begin with, and part of that is about who they perceive they have the relationship with. Part of that is who they perceive they're a part of. And part of that is the contractual situation is right. You know, I've seen it be, you know, the guy gets 10 or 15% of the student body. Most of those are red, brown, or black belts who are paid in full to second degree black belts. And basically they end up with, you know, 20 people that they have a choice of either teach for free or try to get them to pay again for something that they're already paying for. And it is a point, too, where, you know, students who leave with somebody like that who are on a year or 2 year or 3 year contract, you know, that you've got pretty good leverage on that one as well. So what you don't want to be is you don't want to be the schmuck who's everybody's on a month-to-month, you know, payment agreement. And you also don't want to be the guy who, you know, I've had this conversation 3 or 4 times in the last couple of weeks. I'm a Kempo guy. All of a sudden I decided I want to run a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program. I put all my time and effort into building up this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program under some guy who's the, you know, the guru. And then the guru, you know, moves across the street. Tim and Dave Kovar had that. They brought in one of the Gracies and, you know, built in his own little class, built it up, you know, grew it to a couple hundred students, and he moved across the street. I mean, that's always a bad strategy is, you know, is building somebody up for somebody, you know, for something else. So, you know, again, it's a complicated issue, but it's mostly solved through communication. Is the first thing is how you communicate with the employee about what their role is and how you communicate with the students on who their teacher is and who their loyalties lie with and how tied into the organization they are. The third thing is if you have the program structured properly, is even if the worst-case scenario happens, you know, usually it's not much of an impact on the school. And then there's, you know, a lot of conversations which probably go beyond this call, although we can be dealing with a couple of them right now with the peak performers. So the guy goes down the street and he's trying to take everybody. How do you deal with that? And how do you cut the cancer out? And how do you solve that? And that's perhaps merit for a later conversation.
I think there's one thing, but yeah, I mean, I totally agree. That's how almost all these things go. And again, it's something that you've got to be planning for ahead of time. You don't want to always be walking around the halls thinking that there's somebody who's going to stab a knife in your back. But if you don't pre-plan for this stuff anyway, and if the organization is set up in such a way that makes it easy for them to do that, like you're describing, month-to-month agreements, they're paying monthly, that, you know, they have no, you know, outstanding commitment to you anyway, then it makes them easy to poach, you know? Plus you want to have systems in place, regardless of whether you're absentee or if you're the guy on the floor. This is something that, and this is not on the topic, I want to get to, I have something else pretty important to discuss on the employee agreement piece of it.
Yeah.
But from a developmental standpoint, I always had this down here, and I never knew how to define it until I think you made this definition at one point. You know, with the locations down here, I may have not stepped foot in the location with students present for a month.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute I did, it's not like the whole class stopped and bowed. I never wanted them to do that. I always wanted them to continue on with business as usual, right? But there was never a sense that I wasn't the guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So whether I was actively teaching the classes or not, all the students, we had built, you need to build in mechanisms all throughout the process so that they're anchoring the student into the organization, not just to the local instructor. And that includes, in many cases, rotating instructors occasionally. And it includes, you know, how your presence is felt throughout the organization. Does the newsletter come from the instructor or does it come from the organization? Does the, you know, do the emails, does the communication thread, do the videos they get by email, is it you who, you know, kind of presents the material as the sort of the grandmaster, or is it coming from the local instructor? So you've got to manage that real well. So I think that's just another piece of the puzzle that's pretty important. Now, on the employee agreement part of it, the one thing that you didn't mention, I think that's really important for everybody to keep in mind, the more and more granular, see, you've got to take human behavior into account, right? And human behavior is the one thing that's almost like immutable, right? People behave the way they behave. And if you take the time to granularly define absolutely every, you know, piece of behavior, piece of activity that an employee should do. The minute you ask them to do something else, you've just, you know, you just worked against yourself, right? Because the whole "it's not my job" deal, it makes me nuts. You know, when I was running casinos, I had up to 300 active employees at any one given time, and the one thing I never, ever, ever wanted anyone ever, ever, ever to say to a supervisor is, "Well, I'm a dealer. I don't do that. I don't take the trash out. I don't worry about the safety of the place. I don't worry about the cleanliness. I don't pick up the paper wrapper off the floor because I'm a deck person, you know, whatever, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So I never wanted that culture. I always wanted the culture to be the opposite. I always wanted the culture to be, no one is too good to pick up the slip of paper on the floor, you know?
Well,
so I think you've got to be careful with that.
Well, that's the other thing about, you know, I hear a lot of times people want the specific job description.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you do have, generally I'm an instructor, generally I'm a program director, right? But the role of every person on staff is to find more new students, to keep them as long as possible, to renew them to the highest level possible, and to do any and everything involved in the process to get to that point. And again, as you try to become, see, small businesses try to become corporate, but corporate, big corporations tend to be less efficient, not more efficient, is you really want it to be where they're responsible for any and everything that it requires to have higher quality students, keep them longer, and to have more effectiveness with the marketing efforts. And the more you start really honing in and defining and nitpicking what their job is, the natural outcome is they say, "Well, that's not in my job description. You know, that's in somebody else's job description." Anytime you hear that, it means you set yourself up for that. You've got to explain to them they're responsible for getting new students, for marketing efforts, getting new students, for keeping them as long as possible, for high quality and for renewals. And I don't care if it's the part-time person who comes in to help clean the floors at night or if it's a part-time instructor, they're responsible for that list of things.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that, is that, you know, you don't want to paint yourself into a corner, for lack of a better description. And I think the best way to define all that stuff is just key performance indicators. You know, the key performance indicators are how many enrollments, how many renewals, what's the retention rate, and what's the gross divided by student count, what's the student value. That's how we define your quality as an instructor. That's how we define your quality as a program director. Now, there are other things as well, but those are the key performance indicators, the KPI in this business. That's it. It's no more complicated than that, you know. And there are just too many ways to, you know, build compensation systems based on cash, testing numbers, number of dropout. You know, there's so many of these different ways that you can kind of build this stuff that just adds layers of complexity. When really, here's a great example. Last year we did two relatively intensive training sessions with Disney. And one of the things that I thought was fascinating was that, and all the Inner Circle members will remember this if they were at the Disney event, where we did the staff selection training and engagement session, which was a full day, you know, just on staffing. And one of the really, really interesting things, when you look at the Disney organization, one of the things that I think two of the things that were most fascinating to the folks that were there, number one was how detailed and granular and embedded all of the stuff was when it came to the culture of the organization, right? Meaning, you know, Here's how these people handled an exception when a little child was injured, or maybe fell on the ground, or dropped their ice cream cone, or whatever. You know, all of these incredibly granular descriptions of the culture of the company, just how things are around here, but also how completely unstructured and ungranular the day-to-day operations were from an employee standpoint. So when an employee went to a job, or you know, when the cast member went out onto the you know, on stage, and they were, let's say, the hot dog vendor, there was no like 99-point to-do list for a hot dog vendor. What there was a general culture of, here is how we take care of our guests, and you're going to train with this other, you know, top flight hot dog vendor for a couple of days, and he's going to walk you through the day-to-day how to put the hot dog in the bun, but that's irrelevant. You know, the relevant thing is how we treat our guests. So even in a company as effective as that is at delivering an amazing customer experience, there was not the infinitely granular day-to-day operations manual that one must, you know, tick all the boxes on. It was much more robust than that because it was all about the culture and all the little details, all the missing components that you wouldn't remember to talk about in the operations manual are covered by the culture. Because the staff member, the cast member simply has to ask themselves, well, the little kid dropped his ice cream cone. Well, it doesn't say in my job description, because I'm the trash guy, it doesn't say that I'm supposed to stop and help him go to the thing and get another ice cream cone. It can't possibly say that, right? There's just too many things that can happen. But what it does say is this little guy, you know, came from, you know, 2,500 miles away, and, you know, and he's been looking forward to this trip for all 5 years of his life, and what can I do to help this? You know what I mean? So I think that's something that's really interesting that we saw in our benchmarking process for a big company. I mean a significant operation like Disney, that is exactly what we should be doing in the schools, you know? It's exactly sort of just culture-first organizational structure.
And let me amplify that. See, I don't know how many times I've heard somebody say, well, here's the operations manual. I just give it to the employees and everything runs like a clock. And that is just such utter, total BS. No place runs that way. And, you know, Tom Peters, years ago, his line was, the only purpose of an operations manual is to sit on the shelf, collect dust, and when something goes wrong, pull it off the shelf and figure out who to blame.
Right, right.
And the reality is exactly what you said, is that there are pieces where there's a script. You know, the enrollment conference, pre-qualification, handling objections, presenting the money, you know, getting the credit card, filling out the contract. I mean, there's a script for that. But in the overall day-to-day operation, is, you know, your mission is to have happy students who stay a long time, who achieve high quality, and to get more of them. And everyone on your staff has to be bought into that overarching mission and has to understand then that they're day-to-day interaction with people are going to fit with that. So they've got to understand about professionalism, about appearance, about language, about how to be a supportive teacher, an empathetic teacher. They've got to understand all that. But if you documented everything that was going to happen in a martial arts school, it'd be a 1,000-page manual. And there are some businesses that can run by the 1,000-page manual. I mean, McDonald's has the French fry machine, and it's on a timer, and they put the fries in at a certain time, and they take them out of the freezer at a certain time, and there's all of that stuff that they can do. But we are mostly in a different business than that. And what you see, again, Disney, a great example. Ritz-Carlton and other companies that have similar levels of high-level service, have, you know, I mean, that the stories are rampant about the, you know, the employee manual is one page, do whatever it takes to have the customer be happy. Go back to the Disney example. You used the example of the hot dog vendor. Is, you know, one of the comments that Mike McCoy made when we were down there, and he's, you know, an executive with Disney, is he said their cash management at their food service is horrible. And part of the reason their cash management, their food service is horrible, is they give away free stuff all the time. And they don't have a big, you know, 500-page book where they keep track of every free drink and free hot dog. They know that they don't want to slow down the process by having to document all that stuff, and they know that they want everybody to be happy. So if somebody comes back and they're unhappy with their hot dog, they get another hot dog, end of sentence. And there really isn't much tracking of that. And I see, you know, small martial arts schools trying to you know, trying to have tracking and accounting and all this systems in place to control every little T-shirt and so forth. Well, that's just a waste of time. You either have honest people, you have dishonest people. And if you screen for and train properly, you're mostly going to have honest people, and even honest people are occasionally going to, you know, give away a T-shirt, take one for themselves, forget to write down the $20. But if you get too bogged down in trying to document and control everything, you miss the broader point that the mission is more students, keep them longer, have them be thrilled, have them higher quality, and it really isn't all that other stuff.
Yeah, you know, maybe the last thing, Mr. Oliver, I'd add to this is that you mentioned earlier a fear that a lot of schools have, and I've seen this as you know, you've seen it for 35 years, but, you know, I've seen it a lot recently that is enough of a concern for me to really want to make mention of it. You said that, you know, when you have high-quality people, the odds are pretty good that at some level they're going to outgrow the opportunity that you have. Unless obviously you're in this, you know, massive growth mode as well. You know, the quote that I like was, you know, the only thing worse than having high quality people that leave you is having low quality people that stay. Right?
Yeah.
So I think in a lot of cases school operators we get kind of caught up. We get the one guy who's been with us forever. He started when he was 6 or 7, and then now he's teaching for us, and you know, his other employment opportunities out there in the field are probably he could go and make, you know, $25,000 or $30,000 a year somewhere else. So with us, he's willing to work for, you know, $2,000 or $2,500 a month or so, and he's happy with that, or at least content with that. But, you know, really what we want is the guy whose other employment alternatives are, you know, $65,000, $70,000, $75,000 a year or something like that, $50,000 a year, and he's a high performer and he can get up, he can help us get our business to the next level. Maybe at that stage he outgrows it, but you know you'd rather have the high performer for a couple of years than have the low performer forever, you know. And I think it's hard for a lot of our folks to grasp that because of the pain they perceive in replacing them, or the pain that they perceive in losing them. And this I think leads me to the next point that I know you probably wanted to expand on is you have to have a mechanism in place in your school to generate the next generation of instructors constantly. You can't, in my opinion, operate these things, especially if you're going to be in growth mode, and especially if you don't want to have to be the chief cook and bottle washer every day. You know, you've got to have a mechanism in place that just consistently produces people, you know, at the end of the pipeline that can be good instructors or good teachers or good, you know, program people. And you know, that's something I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding. It's not in my estimation, the most efficient way to do that isn't to just have a quote-unquote leadership program that is just designed to be a higher level of tuition for a little bit more physical stuff. I really want that higher level program to be the mechanism that generates for me people who are of the quality and caliber that I would like to hire, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, who have the skill set that I want to hire. So
you've got to be teaching them how to be a product of the product, and how to be an effective teacher. And if you're constantly developing the second, third, fourth level of high-level students and teaching them at that level, and see, a quality instructor is not about they know a new musical form or they can do XMA or something like that. It's not about their physical skill set. It's about their ability to interact with a student. It's about their ability to have a charismatic presence on the floor. It's about their ability to truly be a product of the product. But you've got to be constantly developing that from the second, third, fourth tier of the students. And again, your ideal situation is, you know, the full-time head instructor leaves, there's 3 part-timers behind him who'd like to have a full-time job, and there's, you know, 15 black belts are in the leadership training process who would love to have a part-time position. And, you know, your ideal is you always have those layers of people underneath them. And the better you maintain those relationships, the more likely you are that, the person who's there is developing the support people underneath him.
Yeah, and by the way, it's a systemic ongoing process. And it's one of the things that I was very fortunate to have in my own schools, almost by happenstance. But I never had gaps that I couldn't fill. You know, I never had staff positions that I couldn't fill. I always had kind of like the like you said, the list of people sitting on the bench that, you know, maybe being a martial arts instructor wasn't their lifelong career objective, but in a lot of cases they were just so enthusiastic and so, you know, into what we were doing, they loved to help. And, you know, and we always had the smaller number of people who really thought that this could be a great career path. And, you know, there were successful locations and, you know, it was plenty of opportunity for everybody. So, you know, if you set those systems up appropriately, you very rarely find yourself in the position of being stuck, you know, and I think that's what most folks are fearful of, is if I get rid of this guy, I got nobody. And that forces you to make some really bad decisions. It forces you to keep people much longer than you should have. It forces you to, you know, retard the growth or speed up the decline of the business because you have the one guy who just, you know, without him, you're dead, or without him, you're uncomfortable. So you just have to eliminate that process from happening, and it's a relatively simple solution. You just have to have that ongoing, you know, leadership development program in place so that you always have flexibility in that area. So I just think it's a problem that it's a huge problem if you let it be a problem, but it's a pretty easy thing to solve if you have that mechanism in place, you know, ahead of time.
Yeah, and again, this is a conversation that could go on for forever, but I guess the last thing I would say is it's so important to be constantly focusing on and constantly developing the layers of staffing. And what we have seen a lot recently is that you know, people develop an operation that gets too complicated. And again, this is a secondary subject, but they develop a situation where they've got too many different curriculums, they have too complicated of an operation, then they put, you know, non-homegrown instructors in charge of a component of it, make that the guru, and then they create all kinds of problems for themselves. I mean, that's one problem. And so you've got to develop the culture so that, and it's the argument for keeping it simple, is you're always developing the next layer, the next layer, the next layer of instructors, but you're also having them tied into, and it's also the argument for, whether it be the Muay Thai Karate franchise or the ATA organization or some of the other organizations, it's a supporting argument for that as well, is that having a bigger operation structure, having a bigger organization, is a useful tool to, one, direct behavior appropriately, but also have continuing growth opportunities, even if it's not within your own narrow business operation, but perhaps into the broader organization, which can be managed and controlled in a way that, you know, it doesn't become problematic. But anyway, you had a couple of other questions.
Yeah, I did. They kind of diverge from staff development. So
yeah.
You know, certainly if anybody has any specific feedback or questions about the staff development, you know, area, now would be a great time to hit *6 on your phone and jump right in. Again, I think if you look at what Meshwar was created with Muay Thai Karate as a model, just as an example. When you're looking at scaling multiple locations, you've got three, there are more challenges than this, but there are three fundamental challenges that you must have an answer for. And the answer is never, we can open a lot more schools because we have the guy that we're going to put in place, because we know the guy ain't going to be around forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to have a sustainable thing, all of this stuff has to be built on systems. So the three fundamental challenges, in my estimation, are these. Number one, you have to have enough marketing systems and channels in place to drive enough traffic into each individual location predictably and reliably. The second is you've got to have sales support systems in place for each location, because the sales process is, number one, you know, the second most valuable process that happens in the school, but it's also the thing that they're not going to perhaps be the best at. You know, they need support with that. And then the third mechanism is you have to have a mechanism in place to drive, to develop new staff on an ongoing basis. Because just like you have student turnover, you're going to have staff turnover. And if you don't have a systematic approach to solving those three problems, then I think you have no business in multi, right? I think that you're setting yourself up for failure at one level or another, because you cannot scale this business based just on personality or on market opportunity, frankly. You've got to scale it based on scalable, replicatable systems. And I see it every day, you know, folks that, you know, are running one or two schools or three or four schools, that it's solely based on their own personality, and they're the glue that holds the pieces together, and it's not sustainable. So that staff development piece of it, I think, is vitally important. You really want to make sure that you have that ongoing, you know, program in place, whatever that program may be. And I don't necessarily mean just an instructor training program. It's got to be, in most cases, bigger than that, because the majority of your students are, perhaps, you know, don't think being an instructor is a career path. But you can create, like you have, this leadership program that most of the students move into, that is really a breeding ground for staff at some level. I mean, you have, you know, if you have 80% of your students or 75% of your students participating in a program that teaches them the right vocabulary and phraseology, and you know, again, when they walk through all of these, for example, the reading requirements, you know, what to say when you talk to yourself, and psychology of winning, and 21 Fugue Laws of Leadership, and West Point Way of Leadership, and Tony Robbins stuff, and Brian Tracy stuff, what starts to happen to these students is they start sounding like Tony when they go out on the floor, you know? They start sounding like Brian. They start sounding like Larry Donathorne. They start, you know, this stuff becomes a part of them, and those are the characteristics you're looking for in a staff member. The vertical sidekick is like, well, you know, number one, it's not all that important, you know, but number two, that's much more easily trainable than the Tony stuff or the Bryant's, you know, walking out in front of a class of 60 or 75 students and their parents and having that 19 to 24-year-old instructor sound intelligent to the 35-year-old assistant attorney general for the city or for the state, right? So that's the guy. You know, those are the character skills. Those are the skills that we really want to be developing. So if you take what that guy is and then back it down for 3 years and chunk it up, that's what your high-level program really should be producing, right? So I think that's just a vitally important set of processes that you have in the school. And it's if managed in small chunks, it's easily attainable. It's easily accomplishable. If you wait until they're a brown belt and you think now all of a sudden in the next 18 months or the next 12 months you're gonna turn them into that guy, I think you've got an uphill battle. But if it's a 3 year or 4 year process where they're just the word that you use in one of the sales letters that I really like is imbued. You know, if they're just imbued with these character skills, these attributes, that creates the personality and the behavior that you want to see in the instructors. So it's not the all of a sudden I now walk through a 90-day, you know, staff training thing. This is an ongoing process, and you know, over the period of 3 or 4 years, we can do a hell of a lot. You can make a hell of a lot of impact. So,
we can run an accelerated staff training program and go hire somebody off the street and have them pretty effective in 90 days. But you're much better off to just set your system where you're constantly developing the next layers. And yeah, I remember years ago, one of my full-time staff members said to me, "Well, why do I want to be doing this? All I'm doing is developing my replacements." And my answer to him was very clear: is that's absolutely right. Your job is to be continually supporting and developing the next person who's going to be in your job. And the deal is about your life is that if you're every couple of years, if you're not growing, is you have a problem. And hopefully you're growing within the organization, at least for quite a while. But if you're not growing, you've got a problem. And so you can't grow if there's not the person beneath you to take your position. And so you can go from being a part-time instructor to an assistant instructor to a head instructor to a program director to a branch manager to to a regional manager for a multi-school operation or to an owner-operator. I mean, there's a career path even in a single-school owner-operator. And if the owner is amenable to even in that situation, if they can become a partner or they can become the owner of that location perhaps, maybe that's the owner's retirement plan. But is every staff member has to understand, because it is implicit to begin with, is that they're in a, they've got to always be in a growth mode. They're either growing or they're dying. And if they understand that they're in a growth mode, they've got to understand they've got to be developing the people underneath them so they can move forward.
Yeah, the quote I like, I'm not sure if it was Maxwell or not. I'm not sure if I've seen it attributed to the truth, but the quote that I like is leaders don't develop followers, leaders develop other leaders.
Exactly.
So it's exactly the case in this thing. And I know it's hard sometimes if I'm a smaller school and I've got 40 students and I'm just trying to get this thing up on wheels and, I'm barely making the rent next month and I'm trying to figure out how to put all these pieces together. I know it's hard to see that, but the reality is that and it's easy to feel threatened. It's easy to feel threatened from somebody who has some talent that comes in and perhaps you feel that they may even have more knowledge in one area or another than you. But I think the exact opposite is the bigger sin. If the head of the organization, the very first, I'm sure all of you, anyone who has been kind of following what we've been doing for any period of time, if you've gotten into the 21 Refugal Laws of Leadership, the very first law that Maxwell talks about in the book is called the Law of the Lid. And the Law of the Lid kind of describes, it uses the example of the McDonald's company. When the McDonald's brothers had the two small shops out in California, they had figured out how to systemize kitchen operations to make a consistent product in a very quick manner. But they had taken the organization as far as they could. They only had the vision to see, a couple of miles down the road. And they had figured out how to systemize this thing and make it as efficient as they did. But they didn't have the level of vision that Ray Kroc brought to the organization when it came to, scaling it out, franchising and things like that. And the Law of the Lid defines that. The Law of the Lid is something that we suffer from at a deep level in the martial arts industry. If you, meaning the head of the organization, if you must be, or if you put yourself in the position to force yourself to be the fountainhead from which all knowledge must spring, which is really the traditional relationship, right? All knowledge must come through the Grand Master, and anything that comes around him is not worthy, right? If you put yourself in that position, you've become the lid of the organization, because now your team, your organization, can only move as fast as you can. When the reality, I think, is much different. Organizations perform at a much higher level when the leader of the organization isn't the lid of the organization. When the leader of the organization not only allows but enables and encourages folks to study, and to grow and to bring new things to the organization and to bring new things to the table. And again, if I'm a small school and I'm 30 or 40 students or 50 students and I'm just getting started with this stuff, I know it sounds overwhelming, but you really want to put yourself in that position. You want to be the facilitator. You don't have to be the. You don't want to be the artificial lid of the organization. You want to open the lid of the jar. You don't want there to be any barriers there.
Yeah. Well, and you just opened a can of worms, and let me give you a short answer here. And it reminds me of years ago. I was in a small meeting with Tom Peters, and I Search of Excellence, Passion for Excellence, et cetera. And it was just, we were just there to be the audience for a videotaping he was doing. And I asked him, I said, well, you're telling me that, all organizations have an extremely strong culture so that, through the cultural fit, people make decisions. You're also telling me that they do, independent entrepreneurial starts. If you ultimately have a super strong culture, doesn't everybody think alike? And how do you resolve that conflict? And his answer was basically, well, it's difficult, but you just got to have everybody empowered to be entrepreneurial and tolerate failure. But and what you said is the same type of question is, you've got to ultimately be the guy. You've got to have people loyal to the organization. You've got to, and at the same time, you've got to not have staff who only do what they're told when they're told to do it. You've got to have them being grown. You know, they've got to have them be entrepreneurial. You've got to have them growing. You've got to have them learning and developing, and you've got to have them expanding their own career path and doing that first by enhancing, you know, your business, and eventually it either enhances your business in progressively more responsible roles, or, you know, moving into something else. And it is a quandary, because it feels contradictory, but it's not. You want to have an extremely strong organization with extremely strong people. You just don't want to be building little silos of split loyalties. And you've got to make sure that all of the staff are rowing in the same direction. Again, you know, look at other companies that are very successful examples, whether it be on one end UPS and everybody wearing brown, or FedEx, or on a different end of the spectrum, Apple Computer, is, you know, everybody who's on the ship is all rowing in the same direction, but they're all empowered to be thinking creatively and contributing to the team. So you've got to build both of those elements at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, you certainly have to moderate and filter, but yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
We should probably move to the other questions here. What was the next question?
Yeah, I just had a few. I had prioritized up here, and I can't seem to find it. But I had a couple from Pete Johnson. He had some internet questions that I had answered by email. But I might say that for anybody who's online now or who's on the call, that complete kind of do-it-yourself internet program is available up on the website, and we're basically building. There are two kind of paths that you can follow. There have been a few questions about this. And path A is that there's kind of a click-by-click tutorial to show you how to build, you know, your own website, basically your own martial arts marketing website, basically by yourself. And you know, with very few technical challenges, we're using a WordPress platform, which is really easy to use nowadays. So without a ton of technical knowledge, you can get that done yourself. But there's a secondary channel, too, which is I walk everybody through in that program how to outsource all this stuff so that you don't have to deal with it really at all, where you can hand all this stuff off. I mean, literally getting the entire WordPress framework, you know, installed and put up on your own web server and stuff. You know, there are people that'll do that out there for $5. You know, mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a really simple way to outsource a lot of this stuff. The moral of the story is this: there are several fundamentals that you really want to be hitting on your martial arts student generation website, not necessarily how you're serving students long term, but the marketing side. And one is you've got to have the sort, squeeze, sell methodology that we're teaching, which basically when a visitor comes to the site, they're immediately presented with some kind of a graphical representation of how they tell you who they are. So I don't want to speak to the mom of a 9-year-old the same way that I would speak to the 24-year-old, you know, wannabe MMA guy, right? Wannabe UFC fighter. The language I want to use is different. The vocabulary I want to use is different. The imagery I want to use is different. So the first thing we have to do, if you offer multiple programs, is sort them out. Sort them out by market. The second step is you push them through a squeeze page
But before you slip past that too quickly, is the you know, internet terminology is landing page, and you, without getting too technical on it, if you're buying pay per click, is you determine where they land, and you don't want to take them to like a general page that shows them a smiling 8-year-old if they're looking for, you know, adult MMA classes. You want to take them to a landing page that shows them exactly what they were looking for. And the same is true with almost all of your offline advertising, is you should be pointing them on a landing page that's appropriate to what they're responding to. So last thing I'd want to have is, let's take the most down and dirty. I've got a rack card, and I've got 300 of them out, and I've got the little card out, and I'm driving to a website, and it's back to school, you know, kids offer. Is the last thing I'd want them to do is show up at a page that also shows two guys in Speedos with 12 tattoos that are, you know, that are wrestling or grappling or whatever. Because as soon as you show you know, the mom of the 8-year-old a page that includes what's obviously not what she's interested in, is you immediately turn them off, even if that's a quote-unquote sorting page. And so, you know, I mean, without getting too complicated, is you want to be careful, one, what your quote-unquote main corporate site looks like, but two is, to the greatest extent possible, you only want to ever point them at something that's exactly appropriate for them and doesn't mix messages.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, no, that's exactly right. And that's what those squeeze pages are designed for. So those squeeze pages are just basically landing pages that only show them what you want them to see. The second thing I think to mention, by the way, on the general home page, if you want to call it that, not only do you not want them to see anything that might be inappropriate for their specific market, but you also don't want them to see anything that could be an unspoken objection.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of information that you're giving somebody on your site is what we recommend and what we know works much better through a lot of testing is, frankly, a lot less information than most people are providing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You only want them to see things that move them closer to being a student and show them nothing that moves them away from being a student. So I recommend very highly that you don't put your schedule on a public page. They shouldn't be able to see that. They shouldn't be able to see, you know, imagery of I don't know, anything that might turn them off. You just don't want them to have that data. You're not having a two-way dialogue with them like you would be on a telephone call.
Mm-hmm.
They just simply don't understand a lot of the information that we want to share. So instead, what we want to do is offer to give them more information in exchange for information, in exchange for their information. So on the squeeze page, that's what we're doing there. And again, we're using video squeeze pages on almost all levels
mm-hmm.
now. And again, in that internet marketing program online, I show everybody how you can, you know, completely outsource that process. And again, you can get a really nice looking professional video done for like $5.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's just a no brainer. So that was just the general overview of that. So anybody have any questions about the site specifically? Yeah.
But let me add to that is, you know, this is a big topic, and it's an increasingly important topic. And, you know, in general for NAPMA members and so forth, we've provided, you know, the best information available in the industry and leading edge stuff. But is right now online is you have some pretty major topics. And we just did, the 2-day boot camp. It was a $5,000 boot camp focused 75 or 80% on internet marketing. And we covered everything from online and offline follow-up systems, search engine optimization, buying pay-per-click, Facebook, new Facebook ninja secrets that are just in beta right now, reputation management, using reputation management for SEO, using reputation management for maintaining the reputation of the school, and also site design, site conversion, so forth. And one of the things that we're going to be doing, as you well know, Master Norwood, is over the next couple of weeks, is really launching a complete separate how to dominate and overwhelm the internet. And it's something that, again, you know, sometimes people refer to in internet years, but, you know, there's been 25 years worth of change online in the last 12 months. There really have been some really dramatic changes and updates with Google, some dramatic changes and updates with Facebook, some dramatic changes and updates with an awful lot of this stuff, plus the technology keeps clicking along, and the good thing about the technology clicking along is an awful lot of this stuff is simpler. And we're interacting with school owners that fit generally within one of three categories. They're either technically adept themselves and or want to be, but they're trying to figure out and do this stuff themselves. Number two is they have a student or they have a staff member who is pretty good at this stuff, so the owner needs to understand it on a strategy basis, and they have somebody else that tactically is going in and doing the coding and the programming and putting the stuff up. And then number three is the owner, and you never lose this, the owner has to understand strategically what you're trying to accomplish, but then they'd like to outsource everybody, not everybody, everything, and hire somebody to do all the pieces for it. So what we're going to be doing with this program is focusing on every month the strategy that the school owner has to understand. Number two, the tactics that are necessary for the owner or for their staff member or a contracted person to implement. And number three is, if they prefer, is where they can go get it outsourced 100% and not have to touch it. But you can never abdicate the understanding the strategy. And you can never abdicate also understanding the numbers. And so, again, Toby, you and I talk to people all the time. They have no idea how many people are going from their offline advertising to their website, how many people are going from their SEO or their pay-per-click to their website, what the conversion rate is from visiting the website, in other words, unique visitors to opt-ins, what the ratio is from the opt-ins to appointments. And if you don't know those numbers, you don't know whether you're doing a good job or a bad job. And, of course, we have all those benchmarks for people. So just as a quick thought, you know, there isn't information about that available right now, but there will be soon. And that is our something that we're getting ready to tell everybody about here before long, is a complete, comprehensive, dominate the internet, knock out all the competition. And there's a lot of moving parts to that. But good. The other thing perhaps we should mention real quick is we have my new book, Mile High Maverick, that is within hours, if not days, of launching here. And we'll give everybody information about that pretty quickly. Certainly for Inner Circle, Speak Performers, Maximum Impact members, we'll make available a free digital copy for everybody. But that's going to be available, what would you say, Toby, by Monday. And it is something, by the way, that at the boot camp, among the Inner Circle Speak Performers and those who came to the boot camp, we had a pretty extensive polling and conversation about where the break point is between whether you'd rather be reading, say, Mile High Maverick, the book, or the newsletters and so forth on your iPad or your Kindle, or whether you'd rather have a physical copy. And we're going to be making some pretty dramatic improvements in that way to facilitate, you know, really what is now the tipping point of you know, most people who are at least reading a lot and pretty sophisticated about are doing it digitally at this point. Good. Do we have a couple of other questions that you know of, Toby, that were submitted?
I think that was my list. Yeah, that was mostly my list, yeah.
Okay. I know we had a couple of others, you know, some other staffing situations and so forth. But let's just see if anybody has anything to add to or expand or questions from anything we've talked about, or I guess anything else, they can hit star six on the keypad. So we'll give you an opportunity to do that. So you've got, about 14 minutes available on the balance of the call. So if anybody has any questions, star six, then raise your hand and ask them. And in the meantime, I'll look and see if I have any other questions in my email. I think I had a couple of others we haven't addressed so far.
Yeah, I just have one last logistical item. So while you're getting unmuted with star six, if you did have something, I had one last logistical item. We have we'll be talking about it over the next couple of weeks, but we've been working with a company who's kind of a big player in the industry, in the space, that's helping some of our members, some of our higher level members, with their tuition payments and collections. And we're going to be talking more and more about this over the next couple of weeks. But if anybody's in the space right now, if you're currently processing your own billing, or if you're using something like Square or your own, you know, maybe your bank's ACH processing software, things like that, we've got a very robust, very good solution for that now. And it's called Simple Tuition Management. And it's not a collections platform as a full-service billing company would be, but it's all the automation processes behind the scenes that really what we're seeing is a pendulum swinging in today's market where collections are being less and less and less effective. outbound telemarketers, you know, having a room of outbound telemarketers who are calling delinquent accounts to get them to update their payment methods and things like that, are becoming less and less effective over time, especially with, you know, the lack of landlines and cell phones and things. You know, people aren't answering their phones as much anymore. So we've seen statistically this sort of tipping point where being able to process your monthly billing by yourself, you know, on your own with good software is a very attractive option for many schools now. And we've got and another piece of the downside inside our martial arts industry is that, you know, the martial arts is such a small niche that it's been very difficult for anybody inside the niche to build the things that we really want, to build the processes that are reliable enough and substantial enough and stable enough. So we partnered with the biggest credit card merchant provider on the planet, and one of the most I don't know, progressive software applications, and we figured out how to build the system where we can do a lot of this stuff and save everybody a lot of money. So the site right now is simpletuitionmanagement.com, and it's not completely up yet, but it's good enough that you can fill out a form, and if you go to watch a free demo, you can fill out a form, and their folks will walk you through how this thing can save you a bunch of money. We just did, just last week, we did meetings with six or seven members. And in one case, in a couple of cases, we can save them about $35,000 a year on their billing platform, and really have no interruption in what they're doing. In other cases, we can save people, you know, $500-$600 a month, sometimes $2,000 or $3,000 a month, depending on what your current situation looks like. And in every case so far, and I say this with fingers crossed, in every case so far, if you have a credit card terminal in your school, or if you take any kind of payments online, we can save you money on that. So we negotiated with these folks for, I don't know, a couple of years, and we really beat them up on the rates, and we also really beat them up on how martial arts schools operate. So they understand our business now. And they built a completely separate book of business for martial arts schools because it's such a stable book. And they've been able to get us amazingly attractive rates. We've been able to beat anybody's rates, including your local bank, on processing credit cards and things like that. So any type of payment, it's really something that you may want to take a look at. So just check out simpletuitionmanagement.com, and you'll see kind of a quick walkthrough of the application and things like that. And we can have our folks take a look. If you fax them your credit card statements or, you know, your billing statements, they'll dissect all that stuff and will find ways to save you money without sacrificing anything, frankly. So we're going to be talking a lot about that over the next few weeks, but it's really an interesting, I'm really excited about it because we built something that, number one, is really, really simple to use. And number two, it's incredibly, the back end is incredibly stable. Meaning, you know, it's not like, you know, we've had three billing companies go out of business in the last 2 years in the martial arts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they did, they took everybody's money with them, right? We in fact, NAPMA got hooked on one of those deals about a year and a half ago, and, you know, it costs a lot of money, right? And it's because of how they do business. They put all of your money into a holding account and then do dispersion, you know, dispersals from that account. This is completely the opposite of that. This is the money's going straight to you. There's no middleman, right? So we've been able to figure out how to save people a lot of money on this deal. So, again, just check out simpletuitionmanagement.com. We're going to be able to save you some money. So I'm pretty excited about coming. I'm going to be talking more about that over the next few weeks.
And there's three or four things to simplify that conversation is, one, every martial arts school should be set up to take Visa, MasterCard, Amex, and whatever. Two is you shouldn't ever be collecting a check or collecting the tuition payment monthly across the desk and having to interact with people. It should all be automatic. Three is trying to process it through some software that your bank gave you or trying to, you know, have a list of contracts and go through and manually process each of the credit cards every month is a bad idea. if nothing else, it's a pain in the butt, and it just, you know, it can be very inexpensively automated. The fourth is on the credit card merchant provider that we've come up with is we have had them specifically focus on martial arts schools, which gives an opportunity for them to understand the experience rate, in other words, how much fraud there is and how much chargebacks are and so forth. And therefore, each and every time we've been able to cut off, you know, anywhere from a percent or two to, you know, a portion of, you know, a fraction percent on what somebody was paying with somebody else. So it's much less expensive. But also, their fraud department understands our industry. So we've been able to get them to approve larger and larger transactions and do paid in fulls and stuff like that. And lastly, on the billing side, I think I'd say, Toby, is that, you know, having been in the industry for a long time, is, you know, the first iteration was students bring a check to the front door, and then there was a billing company, and the billing company sent them a payment book, and they, you know, followed up with their payments. And the billing company, that next step was a big difference, a huge improvement. But the huge improvement, the biggest improvement that ever came was when, billing company or not, because it shifted to ACH or credit card automatic transaction and not the student has to think about writing a check every month to pay the bill. Because if they have to think about writing the check to pay the bill, you end up in they're prioritizing, sorting, and if things get tight, you know, everything from the car payment, the mortgage payment, the private school tuition all gets paid before you do. And now what's happening in the next iteration with the electronics is, my conclusion is, again, looking at hundreds of schools that we've worked with, is ultimately the biggest determinant of you getting paid is having it set up on a monthly automatic ACH or credit card. More important to that is having good retention with your students who stay there a long time rather than they drop out. And the ACH thing is, you know, they can drop out and still get paid for another 3 or 4 or 5 months. Sometimes you get paid the entire contract. What happens, though, is once a student drops out and their billing goes bad, is it doesn't seem like anybody, I haven't seen any stats that show that any billing company, any amount of outbound phone calls and nasty letters and so forth, does very much to solve that. It's all about student being happy, keeping them in your class, having great retention, and then it's about having all of the billing automated so that they don't have to think about whether they're going to pay you this month or make an interim decision. And, you know, this company that we're working on setting up, I mean, it's, you know, multi-million-dollar company, venture-backed, high-quality across a whole bunch of different niches, a very stable platform. What I like about it best is that, and again, you and I have had this conversation over and over and over again, but so much of the martial arts-related software that does this stuff is so complicated and so difficult to use and frankly, oftentimes, to use the same word, not very stable. But this is very simple, very easy, very straightforward. It's kind of like what makes Apple so successful, where a lot of this other stuff isn't. Anybody can sit down, look at it, immediately understand how to do it. You know, it doesn't try to do everything. It doesn't try to clean your bathrooms and keep track of every attendance and whether they've done private lessons or not. It doesn't try to do all that stuff. It just takes care of making sure the billing gets collected every month and does that exceedingly well in an exceedingly simple fashion. So I'm very excited about that as an opportunity. They'll be useful for a lot of the schools in the call. Other people are doing things that are more robust or they're happy with ASF or ESC or AMS or something like that, and that's fine. But it is a wonderful alternative that is not going to be overcomplicated and certainly going to be very inexpensive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. Especially
and I have
as much money as we will say, folks.
yeah. But anyway, any last question? I have to ring off, as you know, snatched my right to another teleconference call in about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Hello, sir?
Yeah. Yeah, this is, yes, sir, this is Jeff Scala from King Tiger in Virginia Beach.
Jeff?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I just happened to get the last part of the phone call, and I was trying to get in to find out what the next seminar is going to be, the exact date, so I can plan for that. That's one.
Ah,
and the second one,
Harvard.
The second one was the reading list. I heard you mention you've mentioned these books several times. I was wondering if there was a place on the website that has all the books that you typically use.
Toby, I'll turn both of those over to you. And Jeff, I've got to ring off to another call, but we're coming up to the Inner Circle Peak Performers meeting at Harvard, and we have a beautiful venue that's we got to confirm each of the venues are beautiful. We've got to confirm a couple of the details, but what are the dates, Toby, for everybody?
Yeah,
Not in your circle of peak performers, tell them how they can, you know, how they can find out about participating. And then I've got to ring off this other call.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so Jeff, it's the October 12th and 13th for Inner Circle, 11th and 12th for peak performers. So it's about a month and a week from now. And we're right out in Cambridge. And I'm going to have all the details for everybody pretty quick. We had a chance at actually doing it inside on Harvard campus in one of their really interesting faculty spaces, but that just fell through this morning. So I have all the hotel information and everything for everybody then. But it's going to be it's the 11th, 12th, and 13th. The 11th, 12th for peak performers. The 12th and 13th for Inner Circle. So obviously you're welcome any of those days, all those days. And then the reading list, I know we have that's all like the Mile High Karate student stuff, right? But I can certainly copy and paste the whole list of those things up on the member site if you like. It's not a crisis at all. But yeah, let me make a note of that reading list. In fact, Jeff, if you can email that to me, it would help me as well put it into the list of things to do. But reading list to member site. Member site. Well, what we were doing was putting that into the kind of instructor development channel, but you know, it's way too complicated for what most people are doing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we've tried to kind of tame it down a little bit, but I think there's 13 reading requirements from white to black belt through leadership, and then we just added a few more for the higher levels. But I'll definitely send that over to you.
Excellent. What I did is I used that. I wasn't sure which email to use, so I used the Toby Milroy. NAPMA.
Perfect. Toby Milroy at NAPMA.com is perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, I already did that. All right. Awesome.
Good.
Well, thank you, sir.
Good. You got it. Okay, guys. Well, all right. Thanks everybody so much. And what Jeff was mentioning was our next Inner Circle and Peak Performer Mastermind meetings are coming up, and we're going to be just off of Harvard campus, right? We actually have a few experiences out there where we're studying and benchmarking some high-level comparable businesses, but also high-level educational institutions. So we're going to be doing a lot of you know, kind of benchmarking and study of those types of business models. So be a pretty interesting experience. If anybody, again, if you're under $30,000 a month, you'd be eligible for the Peak Performer Mastermind group. If you're over $30,000 a month, that would be the first kind of criteria for the Inner Circle group. And it's really a great experience. I've got some videos I'll send to everybody over the next couple of days of our last event, and it's really an interesting experience to sit in a room of, you know, 40 or 50 other folks who are in exactly your circumstance, but who are, you know, marching forward at a very rapid rate. So it's definitely a pretty powerful process that we have for getting results quickly. So that's what that's all about. If you don't have all the information about that, just feel free to give Bob a buzz at the office at 727-540-0500, extension 202. And he can walk you through all that. Or just go to natma.com/innercircle. And all the details, you can fill out a form and get all the details there too. So anyway, thanks everybody so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing everybody out at Cambridge next month. And we've got an Inner Circle call, I think, next week. So we'll be following up then. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.